It's On Second Thought. I'm Adam Ragusea in for Celeste Headlee. For cigarette smokers, trying to quit is no laughing matter. New research from Georgia State University finds that 80% of smokers do regret their habit and do actually want to quit. But doing that can be difficult in a world that often glorifies the act of smoking through media, advertising, maybe even regulatory language. With me is Terry Pahacek. He is professor of health management and policy at Georgia State University. This is his research that we're talking about. Hi, Terry.
Good morning.
Also with us is Carla Berg, professor in the Department of Behavioral Sciences and Health Education at Emory University. Hi, Carla.
Hey, good morning.
Terry, first to you. Just in a couple of minutes, summarize for us, what do we know now about why people smoke and why they keep smoking, thanks to your research?
What we know is that people continue to smoke for a variety of reasons, many of which are related to their need for nicotine, but that the key concept is that in the determination of how to approach regulation, there's been too much emphasis on, quote, the pleasure. What we find is that, by and large, the smokers regret having started and are worried about the health effects and wish they could quit. They are not continuing to smoke because they derive pleasure. In fact, it is that they are addicted and wish they could quit.
Give me an example of how that kind of language can emphasize the pleasure too much.
Well, one of the things is that we know smokers like individual cigarettes, maybe the cigarette with morning coffee or after meals are individual cigarettes, but the vast majority of cigarettes are smoked because they are satisfying their need for the nicotine or removing the craving. And in fact, we know that for most of behavioral choices, smokers are faced in like a two-self kind of phenomenon, wishing they wouldn't do it, but finding themselves continuing to do it. So it's a constant internal battle. And that battle that is going on internally is not reflected in how we approach the determination of the risk benefits. It is not the pleasure of smoking. It is the fact that they are losing welfare from their inability to quit, which needs to be more emphasized in the regulation.
Carla Berg at Emory, does any of Terry's research surprise you here? Is this consistent with your work in the field and your experience?
Oh, it doesn't surprise me at all, the findings in particular, but I'm a clinical psychologist by training, so I'm always considering kind of mental well-being and how hard it is to really estimate the impact or, you know, think through how we really calculate or include in our impact analyses of regulations, kind of people's, you know, psychological well-being. And we know that people who smoke cigarettes tend to have a lot more mental health problems, and especially this particular work, thinking through regret and concern about health risks. We oftentimes do not think about that in terms of really population impact of tobacco. And I think this is a really important study, really highlighting the importance of figuring out a way that we can really include estimates of mental anguish related to tobacco use and how we are thinking through the costs of tobacco.
We're talking about smoking here on Second Thought. New research from Georgia State indicates that about 80% of smokers wish they didn't smoke and they are trying to quit. They're not just smoking because they like it. They, in many cases, don't like it and suffer greatly from the habit. They're just doing it to fulfill the chemical dependency that they have built up. The one thing that I often wonder, and Carla, maybe you can speak to this, is that explains why people keep smoking. I'm so curious as to why people continue to start smoking, which they're doing still in amazing rates, despite knowing everything that they know, despite all the social stigma that's associated with smoking, despite knowing that if you start smoking, you're going to have to go outside every 15 minutes because no one lets you do it inside anymore. Why do people keep smoking in this environment?
You know, I think that is still the question that I continue to struggle with. We've known for over 60 years some of the negative impact of tobacco use, and you know, we now have policies in place everywhere that restrict it. That's really helped drive our, you know, the prevalence of tobacco use down. But we still have that segment of the, you know, youth and young adult population that continues to be drawn to cigarette smoking for a number of different reasons, whether it's media or advertising or attributes of new products. And it's really, it's heartbreaking to see, because especially a study like this highlights the fact that people will, you know, generation after generation continue to regret starting.
So, Terry Pahacek at Georgia State, what does your research suggest that public health officials and others should do to try to decrease rates of smoking in terms of how they talk to smokers?
Well, one of the things is that we know what works. We know that higher prices, we know smoke-free policies, we know that hard-hitting media campaigns and other types of broad public health kind of campaigns have a big effect. We know how to actually reach the youth, and the truth campaigns of the Legacy Foundation and the End It kind of approach to making smoking less normative, and the types of spots that are out there now from FDA and others are actually reaching the youth. The problem is that youth are notoriously short perspective, immediate effect.
Sure.
In fact, every parent of an adolescent knows, you know, says, "Why? Yes, what were you thinking when you did that?" "I wasn't thinking," is the common response. So in a social situation where some friend may be pulling out a pack of cigarettes, the inclination is to join the group and to be part of the group as opposed to worrying about long-term health effects. That's the way people slip into it. One of the things that a lot of us are emphasizing now, we emphasized in recent Surgeon General reports, and it has been a campaign that is starting to get momentum, is getting smoking out of PG movies. The fact is that kids are seeing the effect of smoking being glorified still at very high rates, millions of impressions a year. And when you take old movies and DVDs and cable into consideration, they are seeing that smoking is a glamorous thing that enhances your self-image. The industry has spent decades in creating that. When you're dealing with social situations, you want to be part of the group. You want to be attractive. And so that is still the battle that we're facing.
And Terry, everything you're speaking there speaks to things that are all about keeping kids from starting smoking. But what we've learned from your new research is that of those people who are already smoking, the people who are hooked, scare campaigns aren't going to work for them because they already got the message. They don't want to be smoking. They can't help it. They can't stop. They have a chemical dependency. So, Carla, is the takeaway there that we need to stop trying to scare current smokers and instead help them physically kick the habit, whether it be through nicotine gums or other things that can address the chemical dependency at the heart of it?
Well, I guess I would say that, you know, there's not a one-size-fits-all in terms of what's going to work for smokers. And we also know that when some of these kind of scare campaigns do roll out, we do see spikes and calls to quit lines and that kind of thing. So, you know, it's not that they don't work. It's that they might work for some people and other things might work for others. So I think we have to continue to think through on a population level. What can we do in terms of policy and media and providing resources and restricting new products and restricting old products and really trying to think through, you know, kind of multiple levels of influence that we can try to adjust to naturally drive down tobacco use. Working at the individual level is really hard, like you've mentioned. I mean, once a person starts smoking, it's really hard, and it's hard to work with an individual to, you know, quit without putting kind of these structural changes in place to support them.
That's Carla Berg. She's a professor in the Department of Behavioral Sciences and Health Education at Emory University. We were also talking there to Terry Pahacek, professor of health management and policy at Georgia State. Thank you both so much.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Yes.
You too. On Second Thought, producer Ryan McFadden just quit smoking after 10 years. He's over a month in, and here's what the experience has been like for him.
I stopped smoking on November 3rd, so whatever, that's like over a month from now. So I'm not sure exactly how many days. It's been at least 30. So I mean, it's been a while, right? And that's like I quit cold turkey, right? So literally just woke up. I remember the last time I smoked was on Friday night. I was like, man, this is going to be the last time. And I sat there and I savored it, right? I sat on the back porch and I was like, I'm going to enjoy this because this is going to be the last one ever, hopefully. It's funny because I feel like you listen to all these people and they have like these really big, you know, grand stories of like, this is why I quit or blah, 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 blah. They have like these revelations. And for me, I just, I think I just kind of decided I didn't want to do it anymore, right? I talk about how I don't really have, like, you know, anything, but I will say that one of the things that made me really think about quitting was that I was sitting there for Thanksgiving, and my mom made this pie, right? So she baked this pumpkin pie. You know, everyone was sitting there tasting it, eating it, talking about how good it was, and then I sat there and I was eating it, and I was like, man, I can't taste any of this at all, right? I literally might as well be eating, like, applesauce because it tasted like nothing to me. So that was a big moment where I was like, this can't be good for me. Obviously, all this smoking is dulling my taste. So, like, the first few days after I quit, it's like the cliche where everyone talks about how difficult it was. And, I mean, it was difficult. You know, I feel like, obviously, you have, like, the physical cravings. But you get over it, man. You just decide that this is what you want to do, and you push through it despite, you know, actually wanting it. And then, you know, after, like, 2 weeks or so, I think it went away. It was a good solid couple weeks of really, you know, wanting it. And now it's just a passing thing. The older you get, the cliches, you start thinking more about your future, right? So being a heavy smoker for 4 years was not a big deal, but being a heavy smoker for 15 is, right? So I've been smoking for almost 10 years now, give or take. So that does add up. And I think that is, you know, a factor, right? Maybe it is subconscious where I just, you know, I feel like, man, I need to stop now before it becomes a problem.
That was GPB's Ryan McFadden. Got a story about quitting smoking? Call us 404-500-9457 or post to our Twitter and Facebook pages. We're on Second Thought.